It's Open Line with Phil Johnson on Kelowna's information station, AM 1150. Stay tuned. We'll be opening the phone line shortly.
9:08 on this Tuesday after the Thanksgiving weekend. It was rather saddening for me to read all the headlines that occurred with the passing of Rafe Mayer. Had the pleasure of having him a number of times on this radio show as a voice, passing comment on some of the issues that were shaping the province of BC. He never hesitated when it was possible for him to be a part of radio shows everywhere. It was a medium that he knew, that he loved, and that it offered him a voice and a podium. I will not forget the last email that I got from him the last time I asked him to come on, and his reply was, "Phil, I don't know if you know, but I haven't been doing well of late. I've been having trouble with my voice and sometimes with my mind. And so while I'd love to join you, Phil, I'm going to pass this time." That was the last time that I communicated with Rafe Mayer. But this morning, in the first part of this morning's program, I want to talk about Rafe Mayer with somebody who knows him well. Damian Gillis created the very last podium that Rafe Mayer could access whenever he wanted. It was the Common Sense Canadian. The two of them working side by side to create a place for comment on energy and resources and oceans and water and food and climate change and economics and just about everything else that Rafe Mayer put his mind to. In a moment, Damian Gillis. Want to talk to him about the things that Rafe thought about and the things that were his greatest triumphs, his greatest disappointments, and the things that he wished that he had done the most. And maybe ran out of time. Well, the headlines were everywhere, whether it was the Vancouver Sun, whether it was the Georgia Strait, whether it was CTV television news, whether it was the CBC. Taiyi, one of his favorite places to write earlier on, Rafe Mayer leaves extraordinary legacy, passing of a giant, one of a kind. Damian Gillis joins us, who for 8 years worked with Rafe Mayer in building and developing the Common Sense Canadian. He's agreed to come on with me this morning to talk about this man that he knew and loved. Damian, good morning to you. Sad day for all of us, but for you especially tough, I'm sure.
Well, indeed, yeah. It was. As I listen to your comments there, I get these waves of a little bit of emotion coming up, and it's going to take a while to process this. But, Rafe was, I was extraordinarily lucky to spend, as you said, really the last decade of his career as he flourished in a new medium, even when the mainstream media no longer had a place for a voice like his, which was at the time one of the highest rated in history of radio in Canada. But his views were no longer, I think, compatible with an increasingly corporate kind of media. And as he left that world, they, I think, began a decline because of the loss of voices like that and less relevance. And he emerged into digital media and video and traveling around the province and speaking to the public at rallies. And he never stopped evolving and finding new ways to reach people. And that was the part of his career that where I came in. And it was a great partnership. We were 48 years apart, but we, I think, shared a lot of values, including a deep love for British Columbia. And I got a chance to, some of my fondest memories are just driving in the car with him. We'd always listen to his jazz music. There was no chance of putting anything else on, but that was fine by me because he had a fantastic collection. And he would tell stories about politics and the battles that he had fought over the years. And I just sat there like a sponge next to him as we drove to places like Kelowna or the interior or Vancouver Island for hours on end. And I got a chance to learn a great deal from him and sit next to probably one of the most entertaining voices of his generation. So I feel blessed.
And how did that blessing arrive upon your shoulders? Like, you know, how do you, 48 years as junior, cross paths with him? And then, you know, I mean, does he say, let's have coffee, young fella? I got something I want to talk to you about. Like, how did that all happen? I know you as a filmmaker. I know you as an environmentalist. I know you as a campaigner. But how were you the chosen?
Well, I'd seen Rafe speaking at events around things like paving highways over top of some of our remaining farmland in the lower mainland and other environmental issues, fish farms. And these were things I was becoming interested in and started to make films about them. And so that's how we ran into each other. And I began working at the very beginning of this program of privatizing rivers or all around BC. At one time, there were hundreds that were on the books or that were planned. And a man named Tom Rankin had started. He was basically losing his backyard and at the foothills of the Tantalus Mountains in Squamish to one of these first projects called the Ashley River. And he had sort of recruited me to start looking into this and making films to enlighten British Columbians as to what was going on on our wild rivers. And Rafe had become interested in the topic, and I suggested to Tom that Rafe would be the best spokesperson that we could have, because they were trying to suggest this was just all left-wing tree huggers type, you know, and Rafe was a former Socred cabinet minister, and he was hard to pigeonhole. He didn't fit into any kind of traditional mold, if you will, of an environmental voice. He confounded a lot of people, including the media and his critics. And so we approached him and over a period of time discussed it. And he was ready to roll up his sleeves and get into something new like that. And it was just a great fit. And the first night that he officially, you know, was on the job was 1,400 people crammed into the gym in Pitt Meadows over this plan to dam up five and divert five of the rivers there. And over this program, and Rafe had already fought to protect it from gravel mining before. He was an avid fly fisherman and loved wild salmon and the environment. And he got up there and he took to the microphone. It was just people, it was electric. And people took to their feet, and he quoted Winston Churchill as he's known to do. And everybody just felt the power of, hey, we can do this. Well, you know, Rafe will follow Rafe's standard. And the next day, Barry Penner, then environment minister, came on the Global Noon News and killed the project. And I thought that was a pretty good start, you know, to this. It was a $1 billion enterprise. And we then proceeded to work on that issue and traveled all around BC. I think we did 50 or 60 town hall shows just in that 1 or 2 years leading up to the election. And after we were trying to put that on the map, and when that ended, we thought, well, what do we do next? Because that particular campaign continued, but we wanted to find a more of a permanent vehicle that we could work together on and engage around other issues that were coming on, like Site C dam and pipelines. And it wasn't always just rallying against things and saying no to stuff. There was, you know, Rafe was advocating for what he thought were good BC values and the things he wanted to see, and
things that made sense, that were common sense,
and that's where the name came from.
Yeah,
and so that became, you know, our next thing, and I never looked at it like this is going to go on for 10 years. I didn't take in anything for granted. His health was, it came a point where we could no longer hit the road together because of his health. And but he kept sharp, and he was still turning in razor sharp columns up until, you know, a few weeks ago. So I had no idea that this partnership would endure the way that it did, but I'm certainly very lucky that I had that opportunity.
You know, as I listened to you talk about his ratings when he was the open line host at NWN, the largest radio audience in all of Western Canada. I mean, when NW would fire up the along the BC radio network, not only did it take in a lot of BC, but there were some Alberta stations as well that wanted to carry Rafe Mayer because of the proximity and some of the issues. So here's one for you. Because I did want to talk about things that maybe were unfulfilled in Rafe's, hip pocket, things he wished that he had done. But I think back to Premier Ralph in Alberta, again, another radio broadcaster who ultimately became the most populist premier in Alberta history. Yeah. Rafe Mayer could have become the premier of this province.
Maybe, I think he left politics at the top of his game. He was a very important cabinet minister, being health minister and environment minister and consumer and corporate affairs under Bill Bennett. But for some reason he felt drawn to, he'd done interviews with people like Jack Webster, the legend who became his mentor in radio. And I think he really, as a member of the political establishment, he was often called on the carpet to face these tough, curmudgeonly radio hosts, and they did with him like they did everyone, which is kick his butt, all over the radio. But there's something about that he related to or enjoyed, and so he left midstream in 1981 to go into radio. So there was something about that medium that was really attracted him, and in some ways one could say he had more influence at the peak of his career over the public discourse in BC as a broadcaster than he may have as a politician. And so he didn't really want to go back into politics
because he didn't owe allegiances, that he was unfettered, and it didn't matter which side of the issue he believed was the right one, he didn't have to kowtow.
Yeah, and he had no illusions about how our political system really works. In fact, he dedicated a lot of ink in his last couple of years to enlightening people to how our political system actually functions and how undemocratic it is and what kind of changes we need to make to bring it in line with the public interest. So for him, he basically figured if you were an MLA or, even a cabinet minister, you did what the premier told you to. Or he got booted out of caucus, and we see that. So I don't think he could stand at a point where he had these such strong convictions and principles to toe the party line when he disagreed with a policy. I don't know that he could have stomached that. And that's why, politics was something he had to kind of approach from the outside in as opposed to from inside a party like that.
My guest is environmental activist, documentary filmmaker, but of late, for the last 8 years, almost 10 years of his life, working with Rafe Mayer in creating the Common Sense Canadian. Rafe Mayer died on Monday at the age of 85, a giant in the broadcast industry, a giant politically in this country. And just some thoughts on Rafe Mayer. We'll continue the conversation. I'll be back in a minute. Over the weekend, many of us who loved to listen to Rafe Mayer greeted the news on Monday that he had died at the age of 85 with great sadness. And it's a pleasure this morning to spend some time in conversation with Damon Gillis, who for the better part of eight, almost 10 years, worked with Rafe Mayer creating something called the Common Sense Canadian. I'll ask him later about what happens to the Common Sense Canadian. But I'm struck by Rafe's feelings about the media and an informed public. And very quickly, one of the columns that he wrote, Rafe writes, "It's the end of newspapers. We know it. I feel fine." After many decades, Rafe has canceled his subscriptions to boring, obsolete, oil-soaked BC newspapers. Another one was, "So long, Ed Murrow, and hard-hitting mainstream journalism." Rafe on the death of hard-hitting mainstream journalism. The world will get by without Woodward and Bernstein, but it won't be as good a world as honest a world. Canada's biggest newspaper chain has sold its soul to oil and gas. Rafe on Post Media's marriage to the oil and gas lobby. He didn't hesitate, Damien, to take some big swings at the industry that at the same time that he loved, always was trying to get it to lift the bar.
Yeah, well, media really mattered to him. As I say, he went from politics into journalism, so that tells you something about how important that institution was to him. And those were, I mean, some of our shared heroes of people that you mentioned, like Edward R. Murrow. And he tried to follow that example. And, you know, what you allude to there in those stories was when Rafe discovered through another an online journalism source, the Vancouver Observer, that Post Media, the largest corporate chain of newspapers in Canada, had made a $5 million deal with the oil and gas lobby, not just to give them ads in the paper, but to provide editorial content and journalistic content that backed up their position. Without really announcing it, so the hapless reader is going to see a story that really suggests that this pipeline should go ahead, and they think it's just independent journalism, but it's bought and paid for by the oil industry. So that was the kind of thing that really rankled him. And he told one of his kind of best stories to illustrate this. He was asked by Ryerson Journalism's annual review if he would provide — this is a big journalism school in the country where they train the up-and-coming reporters — and he was asked to provide their big feature column for that year, and he said, sure, I'll do it, and they offered to pay him. He said, no, I was happy to do it. So he turns in his column, and he hasn't heard back from them for a while. Finally, he gets a note, and they say, well, your column is unfortunately unacceptable. And he says, and the gist of this column was that when you go out into the world after you graduate, you're going to either be censored or you're going to self-censor for your own preservation. And, you know, be wary of this, because that's the world of journalism that you're stepping into. And so they didn't like this column. And they said, but here's the we've got two options. One, we can pay you for your time and an apology for not running the column, or you can submit another one. And he said, well, there's a third option, too. You can go screw yourself, basically.
No surprise there.
Yeah. So, but that was something that really, really preoccupied Rafe. And that, I think that's why he went into the new media, if you will, and really embraced that. For an old codger, he did a great job of getting on to Twitter and Facebook and using the latest tools and video, et cetera, and that's why we teamed up. But at the same time, what is sorely lacking, I think, or where the problem comes, is that these new media aren't as well funded, and someone's got to go out and break the story. Someone's got to do the hard journalism and digging around in order for someone to share it on Facebook. And we do have a problem there. We've got to figure out a new model that's sustainable and that provides the public with good information. And I don't know that Rafe came to any satisfying conclusions on that.
That was my question. Where is the next Bernstein and Woodward? Where are those investigative journalists that then everybody wants to, you know, copy their copy and put it up on their pages because they want the public to see the stories? But you got to have the initial investigator reporter, otherwise you're nowhere.
Yeah, there's some great work being done in this country by, online media. And in some cases, the public is stepping up to provide some funding, and it's more of a kind of a donor-type model. And maybe as we realize just how important this is and what we've lost from the decline of the mainstream media and places that no longer had a place for a voice like Rafe's, people will continue to step up, but it's going to probably take some time to figure that out. And some of the big papers have started doing paywalls, and people are showing that they're willing to, like the New York Times. They value that so much that they're willing to pay the money every month out of pocket to get an online subscription. So it's not all doom and gloom. There's some great work being done in Canada, sort of the passing of the torch from the old days of the mainstream media to the new media, but it's there's some road bumps along the way, to be sure.
Yeah, no kidding. So, listen, I don't want to monopolize your entire day here, but Rafe's sense of his greatest successes?
I think he was really proud of the Kamano Completion Project. It was funny, when we went up to Terrace to do some presentations years later, in the 2000s, they had already passed the a bill in or a bylaw in Terrace, the city council, to declare that town a Rafe Mayor free zone, because they were all hoping for the jobs that would come from this expanded power project up there. And he found out from good top-notch DFO scientists that it would kill a whole lot of fish, and they had covered up this report. And Rafe got a hold of it, and he went, you know, campaigned for months and years really on end on his radio show and raising these issues. And he had all but given up on it and just declared that, oh, I guess that we've lost that one. And he was out for dinner with his wife, Wendy, and some global TV reporter came up with a camera and tracked him down. And he said, "We've been looking for you all over, Mr. Mayor. We just want to comment on the Kamano completion project that was just killed today by Premier Harcourt." And so he almost fell out of his chair. And, you know, he used that as an example that you just never give up, because you never know. You could be right on the edge of a big victory, and you don't know it. So you just got to keep your head down and keep persevering. And I think, you know, as an avid fisherman and lover of the environment, that was something that he was very proud of. And even going back to his days as environment minister, and this is a right-wing SOCRED environment minister in the 70s, and he stopped the raising of the Ross Dam to flood the Skagit River. He stopped the slaughter of wolves in the north, and he brought in a moratorium on uranium mining. So he was always a pretty progressive guy, and he was able to do, in these different capacities throughout his life, he was able to do a great deal to save the things that he loved.
Was there anyone ever who loved this province more than Rafe?
I'd be surprised, you know, if you could show me that. I'd have a hard time believing it. I really think he was Mr. BC. And the one thing that I think he really changed, he would acknowledge over those years, is that he really came to appreciate and respect and understand First Nations and their title and role in this landscape, and went from being somebody that was, by the acknowledgement of Grand Chief Stuart Phillip of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs at Rafe's 80th birthday bash. He said, "You know, I used to hate Rafe Mayor when I was a young activist," and yeah, he was on the radio. And today we love him because Rafe would say that's one area where he really changed. I think that was probably the missing piece of him becoming a true, we use the title British Columbia, it's a colonial name, but really today's BC is about trying to figure out how we can all kind of work together and respect each other and the land and waters that we share. And Rafe, you know, really got on that program, and he was very much a beloved figure amongst the First Nations as well. So I think that kind of completes the picture of him being really the ultimate British Columbian. And that's what ultimately probably resonates with me the most, because I'm the same way. I grew up here, lived here my whole life, and I'm not planning on going anywhere. And I feel a greater connection, like Rafe did, to British Columbia than I do even to Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I buy that. You know, it's funny you bring the name Grand Chief Stuart Phillip into the conversation. And I consistently would have him on various things, and he was always so angry, and people, you know, used to say, like, he is so angry, jeez. And yeah, I said, well, you know what, he was one of the scoop kids. If you'd been scooped out of your family home and taken away and put up for adoption and so on, how angry do you think that you would be? People just didn't seem to understand, and they seemed to be afraid or intimidated by Stuart Phillip's anger, not Rafe Mayor, however.
And I think Stuart has mellowed a little bit
truth,
in his old
truth.
Age and become really like a much like Rafe, you know, a grandfather type figure who just exudes this wisdom and has probably developed a huge amount of patience and compassion, and I think that's what people react to, is that human element. So both of those guys, those are two people that are really, you know, lions of this province that I really look up to, and I think are part of that coming together of this once fractured, wonderful province, but certainly not without its problems, and we're probably got a ways to go yet, but thanks to the vision and the leadership of people like Rafe, we're doing that work now. We're getting there.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably, you know, if I was to sum it up, that's what I would say about his legacy.
One final break, and then we come back with Damon Gillis. I want to ask him about unfulfilled dreams, wishes, and hopes that Rafe might have carried or talked about, or if there was nothing, which I would have a hard time believing. Anyway, we'll be back with Damon Gillis right after this break. Such a pleasure for me this morning to connect with Damon Gillis, who, along with Rafe Mayer, created the Common Sense Canadian. Damien, blessed, lucky to have formed a strategic partnership with Rafe Mayer that stood the test of time for a number of years. And now with the death of this giant of a man, this venerable broadcaster, this voice that everybody in British Columbia listened to, just a bit of a retrospective. Damon, were there things that he still had tucked in his hip pocket that he ever said, God, I'm running out of time here. I got to hurry.
Well, I think he took things in stride, particularly in the later years. I don't know that it was quite that kind of sense of, you know,
unfulfilled objectives kind of thing.
He knew that he was doing what he could, and that it would come to an end at some point. But there are a few things. I mean, the one that really mystified him is in the early 2000s, he started having biologist Alexander Morton come on his show and talk about salmon farms on the coast and what she was seeing with the impacts on wild fish. And that became a real issue for him. And it's something that I think one of the stories in the paper put it well yesterday, that he battled them to a standstill, but never really won that one. And I think that was probably a regret. I know that he cared a lot for Alex and the people that really put themselves on the line, and would have liked to help them get the ball over into the end zone on that one. But that remained a frustrating battle. He was still working very actively on a few campaigns that were very close to home, literally. The wood fiber LNG plant proposed for Howe Sound, just across the way from his home in Lions Bay, was something that he really felt. And he had talked to experts about the tanker traffic and how narrow that passageway was in Howe Sound. And so there's risks of a catastrophic type event, but also just the emissions that it would put out into the water and affecting a place that he saw as in his youth having been ravaged by acid rock drainage from mines and pulp mills and all sorts of things. And through the hard work of people up and down that sound, it had been brought back to a vibrant place, and he was really happy to call that his home for the last 20 odd years of his life, and had a beautiful view overlooking Howe Sound with his wife Wendy. So that was something, and that final chapter has not been written yet, but he really laid the groundwork, I think, for a good campaign. And the global economics of the industry, as we've been telling people for years, going back 6 years that we were saying this about LNG, it doesn't really support the industry, and it's not going to be a great deal for BC. And I think that will probably bear out and prove them right. And the other thing was Skinner Morgan, this plan of taking doubling or tripling the capacity of a pipeline from Alberta to Vancouver Harbor, and all these tankers. And Ray just thought that was just too big of a risk to take, and there wasn't enough benefit. You know, he had taken to telling the premier of Alberta, who was lecturing British Columbians, that we shouldn't put our needs ahead of the rest of the country, that she could piss off. And, you know, this was even just a few months ago. So we'll see where that one goes. That's a real hot topic right now. And there's a bunch of court cases that are just proceeding as we speak. And there's bound to be a huge public uprising continue to grow if the shovels start getting in the ground. But those are things that, you know, if Rafe would be smiling down, I'm sure, on BC from a better place if the public was able to get together and stop those things.
He was such a voice for salmon, for the rivers and the resource. And the needs that returning salmon had to be able to access their spawning grounds and so on. But something that I didn't know about him until I read it this morning was that he even was prepared to give up some of the things that in his life gave him the greatest joy, because he was a passionate fisherman. He believed in catch and release, and then somehow, some way, he discovered that catch and release maybe wasn't as benign and wasn't as easy on the fish as he assumed that it was, and he quit fishing.
He traveled all over the world. He loved New Zealand. He said, you know, that was probably his second favorite place in the world next to B.C. And when we would drive around B.C., he would tell me stories about all these different rivers as we passed them and how, you know, shenanigans that he'd gotten into with his buddies on fishing trips. And he tied his own flies, and he wrote a number of books. And we had a chance to, I live in Campbell River now, and this is the home of Roger Cake Brown, the great fly fisherman and conservationist and author. And one of the neatest moments was having a chance to take him to his old house here that's been preserved as a museum, and him just walking into the study and seeing all these old books and what it was like for him to write those books that he had read so fondly. And then he contributed to that canon himself. But like you say, there came a point where he, it was actually down to, I think, a particular moment. I remember him telling me this story that he had a fish on the line and he saw another fish come up next to it, like in sympathy. And he swore that what he was witnessing was one buddy, you know, feeling sorry for another buddy who was about to get, you know, he didn't know probably was going to be released, but even if he was, he might have been so mangled up that he couldn't survive. And he said, you know, damn it, you know, I had no idea, but I guess fish do have feelings, and it wouldn't be right for me to put them through that. And that was, from that day forward, he put down the rod, and you're absolutely right. And that's a very telling story about Ray.
Not afraid to give up the important things in his life. If there was a principle to be upheld, or a point to be made. So listen, I'm going to run out of time here in a moment. I need to ask you, what happens now for Damien Gillis? What happens now for the Common Sense Canadian? I mean, he was a passionate writer for it, and you were driving this thing forward together. This falls to your lap, to your shoulders. Yeah. Do you carry it forward? What are you going to do?
Well, Rafe, in a lot of ways, with this kind of day-to-day editorial that he, you know, writing that he did, he was carrying a huge lion's share of the weight on his shoulders at this publication. I was publishing and putting the efforts and time that I had into editing and publishing his work, and that of other contributors that we have who will continue, you know, making themselves available. I'm, you know, my film career is evolving, and I'm working more on big feature film projects now. And you know, this is my first love is filmmaking. And I used to do a lot of short video news reports for the Common Sense Canadian. I have less time to do that today. We've had generous support from donors over the years, but it's never been something that was a full-time job, you know, that would justify a full-time job for either Rafe or I. And so, yeah, there's a lot of considerations there. I think at the moment, you know, I'm very proud of what we've done up until now and raising these issues in the public forum and issues that all became really started from people not even having heard of them when we took them on to being full, you know, blooded hot topics and thousands, if not millions of people paying attention to them. And that's something that I think both Rafe and I can be proud of. But it's going to take a little bit of time. Right now, I'm just kind of sad at the loss, and I'm going to take a few days to reflect on things and gathering some of my thoughts and some old video clips of Rafe to share with the public in memory of him. And we'll be posting that on the website over the next couple of days. And I'm going to take some time to think about it, and then we'll see. But there'll be a future there for my work and the people that have supported us and contributed their thoughts to this project over the years. I don't know if it will continue to be what it has up until this point, but, you know, the battle goes on, and we'll continue to work hard on all these things. And, you know, especially with the memory of Rafe there pushing me forward.
Well, I tell you what, you know, when I look at the masthead, and then I look at the sections: health, environment, First Nations, species at risk, as expected, politics, carbon trade, cap and trade, climate science, food. One very close to my heart, living here in the Okanagan, farmland and food security. or organic and local, hydropower, water, scarcity of water, our oceans. I mean, it's hard to believe, is it not, and doing what you do, that our oceans are under assault. The kind of pollution that we're putting into those vast bodies of water that put the very thing that they are at risk. It's really hard to believe what we are as a species, is it not?
It is indeed, and one could become kind of pessimistic about the human race, and justifiably so, but I think that Rafe, I like Rafe, am a humanist in a sense, of really believe that we do have the power to turn things around, and things can get pretty bad, but they can always get better, and I think that was something that Rafe took away from as a young man. He was too young to go into World War II, but he sure paid attention to it and left a lasting impression on him. And I can just, you know, the image of Winston Churchill walking down the streets of London with the Blitzkrieg on, thumbing his nose at the Germans. That was Rafe, really. And so you, like he said, and as he famously, you know, would quote Winston Churchill's iconic speech, you never, never, never give in.
Never
and,
give up.
And you never give up, and you've got to keep going. And so sometimes you get down, but I think the interesting thing is that people like Rafe and myself, to some extent, you would expect to be depressed people, because we're always confronted with these kind of bad news stories, and there's always people to take challenges take on. But
Damien, I'm against a clock. That's the only part of radio that hurts. I thank you so much for your time and these memories of Rafe Mayer. It's been a pleasure to spend time in a conversation with Damien Gillis. You really should go to the Common Sense Canadian, an uncommonly sensible take on our economy and the environment. Have a look at it. Read some of the last writings of Rafe Mayer.